Hello and welcome to VHTV, your guide to the talent, culture, and finance side of the space startup ecosystem. My name is Brian Mijour. I'm a founder, COO, CTO of Ad Astra Talent Acquisition, and I'm joined by Matt Jurtzen from Better Everyday Studios and Hello. Justice Killian of Space Capital.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for joining you two. I'm eager to dive into this topic. I recently came across a LinkedIn post that sparked a dialogue about essentially asking the question of if it's better to hire for conformity, or what a lot of people simplified to like culture fit, or if friction is actually more valuable. And the conversation got into this dialogue about, you know, the harms of groupthink and conformity, and then the benefits or of challenging the status quo through friction. And, you know, I certainly have my thoughts, and I posted about it, but I'm eager to hear your two thoughts and see where the conversation goes. Because I think it's a good one about like, what does culture fit mean, and how does friction fit into that?
So, I mean, out of the gate, I think it's important to understand the stage of the company, because there's sort of different tolerances for value associated with those attributes, depending on what stage the company's at and what the priorities are. So, I mean, if you're at, you know, an early stage startup, venture backed, time constraint, you know, working on specific milestones that are time bound by cash injections, you know, speed, innovation, rapid market validation are absolutely critical, right? And so in that case, I would say that, you know, you're looking for a direction that's clear, but you're sort of allowing people more space to experiment, iterate, and provide feedback independently. And so I don't think that that's necessarily conformity. I think in that case, you're probably, you know, favoring people that are willing to be more productive in sort of friction. Like they're asking questions, they're thinking critically about the customer, they're trying to understand pain points. And so, you know, in that environment, you're learning a lot, and you're bringing that back as you're trying to make decisions. Whereas, you know, the next phase of a company's life cycle around scaling, ideally you found out a lot more of what the customer needs and how you're going to solve critical pain points for them. And so it is much more a question of rowing in the same direction. And so again, aligning around a set of visions, around your value proposition, around where the company's going. And so in this case, it would be probably a little bit more towards conformity around how you know drive, you know, and scale the company. Now, I would say that probably shifts back again, you know, once you get to a more mature phase at a company where the status quo, you know, is about optimizing the company's trajectory, and you need to disrupt some of your existing business lines to find a new growth curve to keep the company going forward. And so in some cases, you're then looking for people that could be a little bit more creating friction within the organization to try to stir up innovation and drive the company forward. So it does feel like a little bit of a pendulum that swings back and forth depending on where the company's at and what are the priorities and what's needed at the time. But, you know, that's just sort of my broad feel of the topic. I'm curious what you guys think.
Well, I think you're 100% right. And the great thing, it's always great when kind of the feel for a situation matches the research, because a lot of the research out there around, you know, which teams are more productive. Are they, you know, very homogenous teams, or teams with a lot of variation in their backgrounds? And a lot of people focus on the fact that the research says that the most productive teams, the most successful teams, are diverse teams. But there's actually a caveat to that with the type of work that you're doing. And when you are working on creative things, when you don't know the solution to a problem, that's where having a lot of diverse background and diverse thought processes around how to find it really, really help an organization so that you can get lots of different ideas. But when things are a little bit more routinized, when you have a much more standard path that you're just needing to follow, that's where actually homogeneity can help, at least with the team building in some ways. And I know we've talked about this in the past, but there's that idea of, you know, team formation dynamics where there's the forming, storming, norming, performing cycle. And, you know, so in order to get to the performing phase, you have to go through this norming cycle. And by, you know, getting people who have a culture quote unquote fit, that's where you have a little bit more, you already have some of those norms in place so that team building can happen a little bit faster. But I one other thing that I would like to add in here is kind of, you know, changing the terms a little bit that I remember I got from a learning leader that I worked with years ago is, you know, instead of fit versus friction, it's what I love is culture fit versus culture add, you know. And so it's just thinking about it. You're not hiring people because there's friction. You're not hiring people because they're going to be argumentative. You're hiring them because you see there's an element of your organization or your culture that is missing or that you would like to have. And so you're intentionally bringing in people who can bring a new point of view or bring a new thought process in that you know you need to be successful. And so that I always love that phrasing of culture fit versus culture add. And it's really important to kind of at every stage, I do think, to think about how can we be additive to who we are as an organization when you're hiring folks, and that you're not always going to get that if you're just always hiring the same people.
Yeah, I think that's really good what you're both saying, and it touches on things that I bet we discussed in previous conversations, and I can't help but bring up, you know, probably every third time I'm on some sort of podcast or something. But it's like, you know, like Justice, you mentioned, you know, rowing the boat together, and it's like the sum of the vectors, right? It's that analogy that I think Elon probably was, I think, the one that coined, but you do need people rowing the boat in the same direction. And so you need conformity in that aspect. Otherwise, like, friction just becomes chaos, right? And I don't really think that it has to be, you know, I kind of didn't like the premise of the original post of, like, you have to choose between conformity or friction.
It's so
like,
true.
Can't we conform with friction? Can't the culture be intentional with friction? Like, can that not be part of how the culture operates? And, you know, one of the comments, Lauren Crabtree, CEO and co-founder of Epsilon 3, she was like, just no mean people. respect is everything, right? And so for me, like, I'm most interested in companies establishing an intentional culture that rooted in respect, rooted in diversity, and like allowing these types of disagreements to occur in order to provide creative solutions to difficult problems.
Well, and I think one of the best ways to split that difference and have the best of both worlds is to have a norming process, if you will. You know, like, you know, the military is a perfect example where they're intentionally trying to create an extremely diverse group of people that they're bringing in. They're coming from all walks of life, and they throw them into boot camp where they break everybody down, reshape them so that they still are bringing with them all of their past thought processes, but they're saying, you're now going to take that and put it within this framing. And so now we're really getting the best of both worlds, where we all have different things to add to the conversation, but we all know the direction that we're trying to row, and we're all going there. And so I think, you know, most organizations aren't going to do like a 3-month long, you know, forced march kind of thing, but this is where it's, you know, company onboarding is really important. If you have no onboarding process and you're just leaving it up to your managers to have, you know, whoever shows up and maybe you don't have a really structured hiring process, so you're not all vetting everybody the same way, you're just going to get people. Yeah, you might have a diverse set of voices in there where people have all these different ways of thought, but they also have different ways of giving feedback and different ways of, you know, arguing and coming to conclusions and different ways of deciding what the best path is or what direction the company should be going. And so it can create too much friction, where if you bring all of those diverse ways of thinking into a system, which then says, okay, here's how we discuss things, here's how we make decisions, as you said, you can have both.
And I think we've actually, there is a school of thought and a practice that you can apply friction in a structured, positive way to solve problems. And it's called design thinking. It's an intentional process yeah. by which you take a lot of different perspectives, target it around a specific problem, you know, build deep empathy and understanding and observation from all of those unique perspectives and channel it into, you know, a potential solution, right? And I'm a big proponent of design thinking. I think it's valuable for any person to learn. I think it's a helpful tool for a manager to be able to bring in, particularly when you're facing a, you know, an ambiguous situation, to have a tool in your back pocket that allows you to channel everybody's effort into, you know, an opportunity to hear voices and then ultimately sort of, you know, work towards an outcome. So, yeah, I think there are, and that's, you know, only one tool that's out there that fits this, you know, problem set. You know, but we do have these tools. It's not the rogue individual that's causing friction in the organization that radically transform where it goes. You know, it needs to be channeled in a very positive, productive way. So I agree with your sort of rejecting the premise.
Yeah, Brian, I'd be really, or no, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, I think it makes sense. A lot of what we're talking about seems like it kind of boils down to intentionality and knowing yeah. what you want and being intentional about building what you want. I guess where I was going to take the conversation next is, when have you seen folks not do this and fall into traps of conformity? Because some people might not be thinking about this and might not realize that they are already creating unintentionally a culture of just like of groupthink and of just conformity, and where they're favoring a lack of diverse perspective and frankly a lack of being challenged in the culture.
I mean, I'll bring up, you know, from my experience, like one extreme example that I think is pretty obvious is, you know, the U.S. military, and specifically in space. You know, I mean, there's the reason why there's so many defense startups and space startups, and every general, every time they get in front of a microphone, is talking about how there's this coming near peer adversary and we need to dramatically change things, is because we got decades ahead of the rest of the world. And we just got used to this one way of doing things, and it takes 10 years to build a satellite. And then even when startups would come up and say like, hey, we have a new way of doing things, you know, we'd just be kind of like, okay, that's fine, that's nice, but we like doing things the way they're going. And it took a really long time and a lot of disruption and lawsuits and all kinds of things to change that mode of thinking and get people into key positions who want to think differently. You know, so that's a pretty extreme example, but I think in the space world, it's definitely a relevant one.
I mean, two areas I see startups bring this into their culture unintentionally often. The first one is like hiring your buddies. This idea that you should hire people that you'd go have a beer with, like, it literally breeds this multiplicative effect of like the same person, the same sort of, you know, and I think it limits the pool and the perspective and sort of the opportunity, and you can really get into a complacent environment. The second is this idea that you hire somebody that has, you know, a playbook on how to scale a certain function, and they sort of do it rinse and repeat. And yeah, that's really great when you're scaling. Like, you do have a set of like processes and experience, but every company's different, every challenge is different. And so the idea that they'll just, you know, directly apply playbook A into your company, you know, doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work. And so, you know, that done thoughtfully in the context of what you're doing and pattern recognition is okay, but it can create complacency. People will stop asking questions because the person knows what they're doing and they've been doing it. And so those are the two areas I see it happen.
Yeah, I think that's really great. And we discussed this in a previous episode, but the hiring your buddies, folks that you want to like go have a beer with, this is something that I see all the time. And it makes sense and it doesn't make sense. And I'm curious what you two have seen about how to challenge that idea, to challenge the idea that maybe the known quantity isn't better than the unknown quantity, or that the different perspective is better, or maybe you don't need to focus on like, do you click in, you know, at the brewery, but instead where like, how do you build the professional relationship above all else? I'm curious to see how you've maybe challenged that status quo before.
I mean, this is where I'd love to hear what you have to say, Brian. I mean, you're doing this all the time. Like, how do you push back on these folks?
Yeah, it's really hard because there's so much that a young, like by young, I mean like early in the life of the company, like founder is having to manage. And so the amount of ambiguity that comes with building a company and say, I'm going to also add in people that I know very little about. And all I know is, you know, this minor interview process. And I'm just going to like hope for the best. Like, I really do understand the tendency to like lean heavily on people you've worked with in the past, people your network trusts heavily, people that you can like click with really easily and know that you won't have as much friction in developing those things. So I definitely speak to the concerns in like the risks of groupthink and how it like you kind of keep digging that hole with every hire you make if you keep making hires like that. But it is something that, if I'm being honest, I've had a hard time challenging a little bit of, because there's just so much ease in going that direction. And so I'm genuinely curious if you've seen other perspectives that are effective.
I think a really structured process can really help. And so bringing multiple team, you know, if it's not only a CEO that's hiring, bringing multiple team members into the process, having like a thoughtful debrief, you know, actually weighing the different candidates' strengths and weaknesses. There can be, an opportunity, particularly for those early positions where, you know, you need to actually present to the board and get, you know, their options packages approved. And so the board can be sort of a helpful third party observer that can, you know, ask some questions, right? And if a board is doing its job, it should ask questions about who and why and how. So, and, you know, as an investor, whether I be on the board or not, in some cases, I've come into the interview process that can be helpful in, you know, helping articulate why this candidate should consider the company and the financial situation, but also provide an outsider's perspective, you know, that could be around culture fit. So those are a couple tactics.
Yeah, the only other one that I would add in is like that I think that came to mind from kind of like a training point of view, because often we face this where leaders will think about training a certain way and we want to try something else. And I was just, well, can we just try it once? Like, let's just try it this different way once and see how it goes. You know, talk to some of these candidates and see how you like them. You know, have more of a test.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And another one that we are constantly advising on is the like DQing for culture, but without tangible reasons for what that culture is, right? Oh, yeah. So, like, you know, everything's coming back to like defining your culture, right? But like, but seriously, and it's about like, if you're going to DQ someone because it's not quite the right culture fit, like you better know exactly what that means, and it better align with your values, and your values better be ones that do support, you know, nonconformity in a way that drives the business forward. So that feels like a key element that can be really successful here. Anything else to add on the topic, or otherwise I'll wrap us up here, because we had a really great conversation here on kind of the differences between conformity and friction, and how you can set up and define cultures and hiring processes to support having a culture that intentionally allows friction in a way that drives the business forward, that not all conformity has to equal a lack of friction. So some key things that we discussed were, you know, can we think about culture fit less as fit and more as culture add? I thought that was a nice note, and that different stages of the company and where you're at might require more or less conformity. You might know exactly the path you're on and conformity might be better, or you might need to shake up what you're doing and you might need to bias more towards some of that friction. And we've seen kind of the cost of doing this poorly. You know, Matt, you raised the point of maybe that our government has come a little complacency in favoring conformity over friction. So really appreciate you both in this discussion. It was really fun to learn from you, and we'll see you all next time.